to think about it, to be honest. I've had some great teammates and great, you know, coaches that put me in position to be able to facilitate. My teammates have made shots for me throughout my career. Coaches have put me in position to be successful scoring the ball. And I've just tried to, you know, read and react the ball off the rim as far as, you know, getting the rebounds. And hopefully, you know, throughout all those triple-doubles, I got a winning record in those games, because that's what's most important. So I really don't know what to really think about it. I think it's a pretty cool stat, and I'm glad it happened in a way.
That's LeBron James coming back. LeBron now becoming the first player ever with triple-doubles against all 30 teams, 112-107 over OKC. And joining us now is Eric Pincus, one of the great minds with the NBA, covering the NBA for NBA TV, the NBA capologist for B-Ball Insiders, and of course the lead Lakers writer for Bleacher Report. We're happy to have you, Eric. Thanks for joining us today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Where did you, you kind of forget about all the great records that he holds, but at this time, the triple-double was one that kind of came very easily for him, and it's probably something Laker fans are just going to get used to as he continues to approach this year with the great cast of the team around him.
Right. I think he's approached this year all the way back in July. I think he decided that he was going to be the point guard on this team. And LeBron's a very powerful guy. I think the Lakers are going to listen to him and kind of cater to his needs, and it's just so fortunate that he's, you know, really good. You know what I mean? He's such an elite talent, and he's leading the league in assists. Rebounds are no problem. He's got great size. He's the biggest point guard in the league, right? I mean, the guy's gigantic, not just in height, but he's so big and strong. And then he's easily going to score 20 points a game. So, he's a triple-double machine. I know Russell Westbrook kind of holds that honor, but when LeBron James wants it, he's going to get a lot of triple-doubles this year.
We've seen, the Lakers are off to a tremendous start. I think I saw a stat. They have two five-game winning streaks in the same year. That's as many as they had in the previous 7 years combined. They've already equaled that this year. Their second defensive rating, we know about the record. We know a team with a healthy LeBron James and Anthony Davis is going to contend. Do you believe, I believe they've been the best team in the regular season so far, but we know how good the Clippers are. We haven't seen the Clippers at full strength. Do you believe right now, with the way that the rosters are currently constructed, that the Lakers have the upside that the Clippers do, or are they still a move away and Andre Iguodala perhaps away or another ball handler from reaching the Clippers' ceiling, or what we expect the Clippers' ceiling to be?
Well, I think we need to see these teams get to the playoffs, health, all that kind of stuff. But the matchup is difficult for the Lakers, specifically in the area of defense against power small forwards. We're, you know, bigger guys, stronger guys who are really good scorers. So we saw Pascal Siakam really hurt them. We saw Kawhi hurt them. Those are the only two losses they have. And then you add Paul George to that mix. Those are the kind of players the Lakers don't really have a lot of size on the perimeter to defend. So, for instance, you've got Danny Green, who can do it to a degree, and then you've got LeBron, you have Anthony Davis. But beyond that, we saw KCP try to guard, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope try to guard Kawhi Leonard in the opening night and just got torched. We saw Kyle Kuzma try to guard Pascal Siakam against the Raptors, and that didn't go particularly well either. And so I think Andre Iguodala fits that need. If it's not Andre Iguodala, maybe Jay Crowder, who's also on the Grizzlies. They need a small forward, but a bigger one, a guy who can handle that kind of power. Other than that, I don't think the other ball handler is really needed. You've got Rondo off the bench. You've got Alex Caruso, who's playing well, especially defensively. If you need an offensive spark, you got Quinn Cook. You've got Avery Bradley, who's on the mend right now with a relatively minor injury, they think, but he's definitely out for a bit, a slight fracture. But I think really Andre Iguodala could be the answer. Question is how do you get him? And the Grizzlies would like to trade him. He makes $17 million. Lakers really don't have the means to do that. But if they don't get a trade, a lot of people in the NBA think they'll eventually buy him out. And then if he's bought out, probably the Lakers, but yeah, you could go to the Clippers, you could go to the Rockets. It becomes a question of what Andre Iguodala wants.
That's Eric Minkus, the lead Lakers writer for Bleacher Report, as well as NBA capologist for B-Ball Insiders and NBA TV. Follow him on Twitter at Eric Pincus. So explain kind of like how Dwight Howard has embraced his new role. He goes from like Superman to outcast to now like an elder statesman who's there to provide, you know, camaraderie and chemistry in a team where he's never been able to do that role before. How has he embraced this this year?
Well, it's a stunning turnaround, I'll be honest. I didn't expect it. I was around for Dwight's year in Los Angeles with Kobe, and it was a headache. I mean, he's not a bad guy. I never disliked him, but there was a lack of maybe understanding of how serious you need to be to win. And I'm not expecting these guys to be, like, brooding in the locker rooms and not having any fun. Of course not. Like, enjoy your life. I mean, this is basketball, right? But there was a point where Dwight was too much in the fun side of it and not enough in the serious side of it. So do your job seriously and then have fun while doing it. And he was about fun and not about... I mean, he wasn't bad then, but he didn't understand how to win. I still don't know. I mean, it's still too early, but everything that he's done since he's gotten here to Los Angeles is play his role. Come off the bench, set hard screens, which he wouldn't set hard screens for Steve Nash when he was with the Lakers.
That's right.
Ridiculous. Right? Now he's doing, he's rebounding, he's blocking shots, he's getting the crowd hyped up, he's getting his teammates hyped up. He's bonded with JaVale McGee, who's, to a degree, his minutes he's taken, but they are on the same page. And what I think most interesting, Dwight, after games, the interviews might be a little, I don't know, maybe annoying even back in the day. but nowadays, we don't really get much in by way of post-game interviews, because when the game ends at Staples Center, Dwight shoots around, and he doesn't just shoot around for 5 minutes. I mean, he shoots around for a good 45 minutes, maybe 30, 40, maybe even an hour. I mean, he's out there getting free throws up, working on his moves, really focused on being a better player. So most people don't change a lot. You know, everyone changes over the course of their lives and their careers and all that. But usually they are who they are at the beginning is more or less who they are at the end. There's just maybe they've changed 10%, maybe 20%. But look, right now, Dwight's changed. It's a month into the season. It's impressive. 2 months in, if he's still like this, it's even more impressive. And there's no reason to think right now that this is not who he is. So, you know, credit to him and for his growth.
What is Frank Vogel? I mean, we know he has a reputation for being a strong defensive coach. Feels like he's instilled that again with this Laker team, being that they are number two in defensive rating. And the eye test certainly backs that up as well. But what else has he been able to instill in this team that they didn't necessarily have last year? Or is it not so much about Vogel and just about the personnel and having more veterans than a guy like Anthony Davis?
Well, I mean, it's everything. Last year's team, young players don't know how to win. It's a general rule of thumb. Every so often there's an exception, but usually it's not the case. Young guys make very simple mistakes. One or two, you didn't box out, you had one turnover, messed up some cover, something, and that costs the game. And it happens over and over again, and unfortunately, it takes years typically for young players to adopt and to adapt to the NBA. Now, Kyle Kuzma makes a lot of mistakes to a degree, but they're manageable. When you have Kyle Kuzma and Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball and Josh Hart and all the other young players that they had, those mistakes compound because it's not one guy making those mistakes, it's multiple guys. And look, I love all those, you know, those players. I covered them as they were here and enjoyed each one of them. But young guys don't win. And so now you've got a team that has veterans, and look, everyone's going to make mistakes. You know, KCP, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, has made plenty of them on offense, and the fans have sort of turned on him to a degree, but then he hits a shot last night that seals the game. And Frank Vogel's part in all this, yeah, he has a better team, he has veterans, they're going to make mistakes, but their mistakes are going to be fewer than young players. But Vogel has gotten out of the way in a lot of ways. He's letting LeBron play the way that LeBron wants to play. He's letting Rondo run the offense. So far, the Lakers are not a great offensive team yet, but they're improving. And if they can discover their outside shot, which they're a bad shooting team, which doesn't really make sense, they're getting a lot of open looks. if they can start to raise their percentage to just good, middle of the pack, they're going to blow out teams pretty easily. I will say I am impressed by Vogel. Every button he's pressed seems to be the right one, seems to have a good feel for rotation, seems to have a good feel for the moment, doesn't want to take the credit. There's nothing to complain about if you're a Laker fan. I know that the coaches are usually the first guy in the NBA on any team that you throw under the bus when the team struggles, but the team hasn't struggled, and he's looked like he knows exactly what he's doing.
Follow him on Twitter at Eric Pincus, and when you do, you'll catch some next level hoop from over the weekend. Hey, Eric, real quick before I let you go, what was it like to watch your daughter take over and score 4 points in 30 seconds in that tournament over the weekend?
Oh, it was cool. Yeah, we were playing a team with two really big girls, like, you know, like a foot taller or something like that, and we didn't get the win in that game because, you know, but we were down 11-2. My daughter caught us back up, went into halftime 11-10. Just size wins out, but it's a lot of fun. I love the game, and my daughter does as well. You know, can't complain, you know, when you see a kid out there doing something special.
I just don't know how you held the camera still, because when she went coast to coast, I would have been going crazy.
Oh, yeah, I've gotten better at it. You should see some of my earlier games, earlier in my career as a videographer dad. You know, you lose your mind, you end up videotaping the floor, the ceiling, you know, who knows what. But I've gotten better at it.
Well, thanks again for your time today, Eric. We appreciate it. We'll talk down the road, man. Thank you.
All right, guys. Thanks,
Rob. Thanks, Eric.
Lead Lakers writer for Bleacher Report and NBA capologist for B-Ball Insiders and at NBA TV. Great to have Eric on, because that's the kind of insight you don't normally get, especially about Dwight Howard taking shots after the game and practicing his footwork.
Yeah.
Are we talking about the same D12?
I guess. I don't know.
That's not the same guy that we saw in his prime with Kobe.
Well, here's the thing. He accepted. Look, I mean, it's almost like a Carmelo situation, right? He was on the way of being out of the league, and then he finally said, "Okay, I'm not a star. I don't need post ups. Don't post me up. I don't need touches. What can I do to contribute to winning?" And he bought into doing things that contribute to winning, which is screening, running the floor, catching alley-oops, trying to block shots, and trying to be in the right spot on defense. He doesn't need shots. He doesn't need to touch the ball. He doesn't need any of that. And it's working. And it's paid off. And he's coming off the bench. And it doesn't matter to him. And he's being a good teammate and things like that. And, you know, that's what a little humble pie will do for you. I mean, it's a dessert best served warm with some whipped cream. And I think we could all eat some from time to time. We could all use some. And he had some. And it paid off.
You wondered where it was going to end, because this time last year when he was on the Wizards and all these crazy stories were coming out about his lifestyle.
He was a punchline.
It was becoming a joke.
Yeah.
And nobody of that immense talent has ever been that bad. And then it was like, it almost made you feel like they were trying to like provide, like there's back injuries that's keeping him out. He doesn't seem like he has any sort of residual problems from any stemming chronic injuries of the past.
I mean, he looks just as bouncy. I mean, maybe not just as bouncy, but he looks, you know, like he's 23, 24, 25 with the way he's able to move and get up and down the floor. And I think part of that is, you know, they're limiting his minutes. He's not taking nearly as much of a pounding because there's not so many post-ups, and he's not getting hammered. He doesn't have the ball as much and things of that nature. So he looks really fresh. And, look, it's a long way to go. The season just started. We're still in November. But if the Lakers can make a deep playoff run and maybe win a title, I think that's going to be really, really redeeming for Dwight Howard's legacy. And, granted, he's just a role player, but it might change the way that we, the masses, view him as a player and view his kind of place in the history of the game. I mean, he was – let's not forget, he's already been to a finals. He's a multi-time defensive player in the year. He's the best center in the league. Mm-hmm. And he really never cashed in on that potential. But the fact that he's able to kind of have the self-awareness, that's what it is.
Yeah, that's it.
Self-awareness to understand how he can contribute, how he can stay in the league, and he's doing it. And it's incredible. It's a cool thing to watch.
That's Sam Gordon covering the NBA, the fight game, and much more with the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Follow Sam on Twitter at @BySamGordon, and you can catch the Lakers on Sports 920 The Game. That's your home for Laker basketball. Next up, Friday night, 5 o'clock, they tip it off at OKC. Pregame begins at 4:45 on Sports 920 The Game for Laker Hoops. When we come back, we'll go over a little more NBA, following the fun trajectory of Luka Doncic and more, man. Here on the morning show, Ralph, at 9:30 with your six-pack and double shot power from college football.
This traffic report is brought to you by
UMC.
It's the Press Box on ESPN 1100 and 100.9 FM.
There is the mismatch right here.
Now it's Luka. Deep three over four! Luka Magic!
Today in the next lap, the nap, I dreamed like I was going to score 16 in the first quarter, so then I scored 17, so I was like, dreams don't come true. But no, I mean, amazing win, great effort, great defense, and just amazing.
It is amazing to watch Luka Doncic continue to impress. Back here on the Press Box Morning Show, Sam Gordon, the playlist. This is his wave.
Lil H the Izzo.
All game long,
I'm vibing,
Sam.
I'm vibing, Clay. You've been killing it, man. Thank you.
Fill it in for Ed Grady. Ed Grady never comes in with music like this.
I guess
it's
not.
It's like play some Blake Shelton. I'm like, I don't want to play Blake Shelton.
We had a little Jay-Z this morning, a little Kendrick Lamar, little UGK, Outkast, Childish Gambino, RZA, GZA, Wu-Tang Clan.
Lauryn Hill.
Lauryn Hill. We got a little bit of everything.
We got everything, man. And we even got your college football six-pack and double shot coming up next with Ralph Michaels from Wager Talk. So, Luka, 40-point triple-double, 42 points, 11 rebounds, 12 assists as they smoke San Antonio, 117-110 on Monday night. So, where does this send you? Because that sent the Spurs to their sixth straight loss, but... this is just a star in the making, and it's fun to watch this come along. Great repeat from last year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we all knew Luka Doncic was going to make the leap. I don't know if we saw this kind of leap this soon, but it shouldn't be surprising to us. This is a young man, 20 years old, who's been busting grown men since he was 15. Professionally in Europe since he was 15. He was dominating the second-best league in the world when he was 18. He was the MVP of the EuroLeague when he was 18 years old. You know, 18, I guess he had turned 19 during that year. Already played in big games, played in big moments, and Dallas is really empowering him to be himself. I mean, he handles the ball. He's a point. You know, it's positionless basketball, but a point forward, point guard, whatever you want to call it. He's a playmaker for his team, and the things he's reading, the reads he makes, the IQ, the understanding of the situational awareness, and that's in addition to getting to the rim at will. That's in addition to the step back three pointers that he hits with regularity, getting to the free throw line nearly 10 times a game. He's a total package, and he's 20, and it's just interesting to me that Dallas is the team that got him, and I don't think this is a hindsight thing at all. We know where the NBA is going, right? The NBA is becoming a positionless league. It's about wings and ball handlers, and they have become increasingly more important than big men. And unless you're an Anthony Davis or Joel Embiid or maybe a Karl Anthony Towns or that kind of player, if you're a big, your impact on the game has become marginalized because we know it's about the three-point line now. And things of that nature. The teams, there are multiple teams that passed on Luka Doncic.
I was just going to ask you about that.
To me, this is not hindsight.
Okay.
They took big men that couldn't. Phoenix, it took DeAndre Ayton, and Sacramento took Marvin Bagley III. Fine players. They're going to have nice careers. But in an era that's marginalizing big men, especially ones that don't defend, there were bigs that don't defend drafted ahead of the European LeBron James. It just didn't make any sense then, and then you see what Luka Doncic is doing now, and it doesn't make any sense now either. I mean, this isn't a hindsight thing. Can you imagine if I love watching Luka Doncic play in Dallas, but if he's on Phoenix with Devin Booker, yeah, I mean, what kind of backcourt is that for the next decade? He would have completely, and that was within the realm of reality, and it didn't happen. So Dallas gets their star, and they're the number two offensive team in the league. They have a winning record. They're going to make the I believe they're a playoff team this year. They really don't have anybody else that can create offense. Tim Hardaway Jr. comes off the bench and can score a little bit. He has so much responsibility in terms of orchestrating their offense, getting them good shots every trip down the floor. And this hasn't been a problem for him, not one bit. And imagine 5 years from now when he's better and even better than he is now. He's a prodigy. He's a phenom. He's the best 20-year-old we've seen since LeBron. I mean, he's ahead of – not going to say he's going to reach Kevin Durant's ceiling. I don't know if we're ever going to see somebody like the easy money sniper, as they call Kevin Durant, where you're 6'11 and can just score like that. But in year two, he's ahead of Kevin Durant's trajectory. He's on the LeBron James trajectory. That doesn't mean he's going to be LeBron, but he's the best 20-year-old we've seen since LeBron.
But it's okay because, this, like you said, playing and putting up numbers better than any 20-year-old in history, like in those regards, like now he's averaging a triple-double. We're 29.5 points, 10 rebounds, 9 assists a game. Like, this is a we haven't seen anybody play like this. And you take, like, a full year in scope, he's had, like, 17 triple-doubles in the year 2019.
Yeah. I mean, this is
something really coming easy for him.
It's rarefied air. And he's been – I mean, he's the son of a coach. He's been playing professional basketball for years. He came into the NBA with years of professional experience. Not just professional experience. You see guys come in. A lot of these guys that are drafted from internationally have played professional basketball. This was different.
Yeah.
He was the star, the best player in the second-best league in the world that features – former NBA players, that features guys that are good enough to play in the NBA and choose not to because they're from Europe or maybe they're playing in Europe. So what he's doing in the NBA, I mean, it's he's already a top 10 player in the league in terms of his overall impact. And we're looking at a guy whose ceiling is the best player in the NBA. I was talking to one of my friends about this yesterday, and if Dallas calls Milwaukee up right now, just take contracts out of it, calls them up right now and says, we'll give you Luka Doncic for Giannis straight up, Milwaukee would say no. But they would think about it. You know, they would, that's interesting. No, we're going to keep Giannis, but they think about it.
They would look at it from all sides. You're right.
If Milwaukee calls Dallas and says, we're going to give you Giannis for Luka, the Dallas is hanging up the phone. They're not even thinking about it. So those two guys to me are the stars of this next era. When the LeBrons of the world, the Durants of the world, the Steph Currys, the James Hardens of the world phase out, and it's a cool thing to behold. I mean, I can go on and on. But I don't think there's enough superlatives to describe this kid. And maybe there's a little bit of an infatuation with him right now because of how good he's been. But I think it's well deserved. I mean, he's carrying Dallas. A Dallas team that's not getting what you thought you'd get from Kristaps Porzingis, that isn't super deep, doesn't have all this high-end talent. He's carrying their offense right now, number two offense in the league.
And we have those great stories that kind of push their way to the forefront in the NBA. It's hard to find in this part of the year because sometimes football will just over-dominate, and college football dominates, and you don't get to hear too much about what Luka's trying to do. But what the story is that pervades right now in the NBA is load management. And it's just a phrase. It just means rest. But I have never seen a more outpouring of anger and just like slingshots coming from older players saying like, we were paid to play all 82 games and that's all that should be done now. And I'm like, we're only like 6 years removed from when you last played. Why are you talking like this?
Right?
The old former players that are coming out now have no business going on about load management unless they feel like they should have got it in their day because they probably did.
Yeah, well,
they probably needed it.
I mean, if we're looking, if it's about winning the championship in June and going, the playoffs, 6 weeks, 8 weeks of the NBA playoffs, so grueling. It's a really smart thing to do, right? It's really intelligent. We know that having the number one, number two seed isn't the end all, be all in the postseason. It's not. And as much as the NBA kind of wants to incentivize these regular season games and emphasize seeding, we've seen. I mean, LeBron's teams have gotten to the finals when he's been a four seed, or I don't know if he's ever been the one seed and made the finals. I mean, he was always the two or three. I guess there was a couple years with the Heat when he was the number one. But they always kind of, they never really, I mean, they never went all out in the regular season. And the whole low management thing really started in San Antonio with Tim Duncan and Ginobili and Parker. Those guys were getting nights off as A's in their 30s. Now, I think the difference with it, why it's being viewed as a little differently now, is Kawhi Leonard's in his prime. I mean, he's 28 years old. He's in his prime. And he's arguably the best player in the world right now, and he's a guy people want to watch play. And yeah, you got to do what's best for the team and things like that. But and you got to protect your investments. But the reason that the salary cap is what it is, that it's $110 million or $115 million, and these max contracts are what they are, is because we love basketball and we watch. And the TV deal is why the cap kicked up so high. And now we can't watch these guys on TV 15 or 20 games a year. So I understand both sides. From an organizational standpoint, really, really intelligent. But as a fan, I like watching Kawhi play. Kawhi's an awesome player. He's really, really good. And we're only going to get to see him, 55, 60 times this year when, he's got a quote-unquote knee contusion. But we know that he's healthy enough to play, that he's in the prime of his career, and that if the circumstances were different, if it was the postseason, he would be out there. So it's an interesting debate. I don't think it's going away. Maybe they can be tweaked a little bit where you let Adam Silver know ahead of time, hey, these are the games, we're going to book these 8 to 10 games for Kawhi, and that way you don't have fans coming out and paying all this money, and then the NBA can shift their national TV. I don't know. They can shift the national TV games a little bit. I really don't know what the answer is, how to solve it, or if you can solve it, but I understand both sides.
I think, fan entertainment's a priority for the NBA. Is it a priority for fan entertainment at the game or on TV? Because it seems though that the TV networks are so unhappy about it that forced the NBA to put that policy in place of a $100,000 fine for teams that sit healthy players for nationally televised games. But the Clippers will always have this, saying that Leonard is suffering from little injuries stemming from the patella tendon. We can't go and push him any further. So it's almost like a moot point if they want to continue on this witch hunt to go and try to like drag the Clippers and Kawhi down. Look, they have to be careful with his knee, and they'll always have that concern.
Yeah, they will. And then from an organizational standpoint, look, load management makes it, like, I get it. It makes a ton of sense. We want to win the title, so the Clippers are thinking we're going to protect our investment. But it's just interesting. It was classified as load management the first whatever two or three games he missed.
Yeah.
And then Doc Rivers is inconsistent. You know, he says, look, he feels good. We're
feels
just giving
fine.
Him. And
yeah.
then that, but that's inconsistent with the medicals that the NBA had. So now it's a knee injury. You got to go back and forth with how maybe it's all semantics at the end of the day. But I understand both sides. It'll be curious to see how this evolves and if Adam Silver is willing to address this.
That's Sam Gordon with the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Time to get your pencils out because we'll move to college football. Six-pack and double shot with Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com is next here on the Press Box Morning Show.
Only one thing better than a Thanksgiving turkey, and that's a free Thanksgiving.
It's time for Ralph Michaels. From WagerTalk.com with your six-pack and double shot of college football. The Press Box Morning Show here with you, Clay Baker, Sam Gordon, and Ralph Michaels. Ralph at WagerTalk. Follow him on Twitter at CalSportsLV. And my friend, I need a double shot. It's been bad on the roadways. Gloomy Gus. Let's get to the booze. Double shot of vodka. We got the Nevada teams. UNLV plus six, San Jose State. What have you, my friend, for the final game at Sam Boyd Stadium?
It is. And, you know, I'm not giving UNLV anything extra for that. You know, it may be emotional, but it's not a storied program, but it's still going to mean something to the kids. What I look at more is you're looking at a San Jose State team that, while greatly improved this year and certainly headed in the right direction, they're in a way favored for the first time since 2016. It is clearly a different dynamic when you have to go on the road and you're expected to win a game instead of pulling an upset. You know, I think the Rebels, even though they struggled with 235 yards last week, this is a San Jose State team that's allowing over 235 yards per game rushing. I think UNLV will be able to move the ball over the ground and get the cover.
Follow them on Twitter at CalSportsLV. WagerTalk.com is the website. It's not just about football. It's not about dollars and cents. It's about college basketball and NBA. And Ralph always provides weekly and daily information. Go online to WagerTalk.com and find his page, and he gives it out for free, including some basketball stuff. And what do you think about so far about the run of Rebels as tonight they face Texas State at home, and the Rebels are a short favorite at four?
I'm actually surprised at the line. You look at UNLV, and, you know, this is where the coach makes the difference. You're 2-3, but heck, you're a couple baskets away from being 4-1. So what is TJ Oates? What can he do? Can he make this team focused? I absolutely believe so. You know, you say, hey, guys, we took Kansas to the wire at home. Kansas State and the wire at home lost in overtime. We go to Cal, we lose in overtime. Texas State has a very unique dynamic. You know, they have a 6'8" player who not only rebounds, but he shoots threes from the outside. So it's going to be interesting to see how UNLV handles it. There's a low total here of 130, but with the pace of both teams, I actually like under that total as well.
We got Fresno State opening up as a, I don't know about opening, but right now favored by 14 against Nevada. Just what do you make of that matchup? What have you seen from these two teams so far?
I am not a fan of this Fresno State team, and, you know, Nevada's been ugly. I mean, they've used four quarterbacks, but, you know, what happened? They got a big win. They pulled the upset last week going to San Diego State in a game that they didn't have to have many yards. And, you know, it's not often you get 226 yards and 12 first downs, and you pull the outright upset as a 17-point underdog. But that's what they've done. They're now at six wins. They can play a little more relaxed. And I look at Fresno State, and it's a team that is still living off its past performances. Their reputation does not match the game they've played. In their last four games, they've been outgained by an average of 150 yards per game. I think Nevada keeps it close.
Over the weeks, we were kind of preparing for this one matchup where Ohio State would have Penn State in their grasp, and we asked you, I think 3-4 weeks out, what this line would be, and you kind of felt like it'd be Ohio State 17, and it's not too much farther away from where we thought those two teams were going to be undefeated heading into each other, and now here we are at one loss, and Ohio State looking for that rarefied air. How do you think this will play out on Saturday?
Well, I was fortunate. I played against Penn State in that Minnesota game just because Penn State is a bully. when they find teams that they can beat, yeah, they look good beating Maryland 59-0 and Purdue 35-7. But in those games, like we saw against Indiana, hell, they were a 14-point favorite against Indiana. Oh, did I get in trouble by saying hell? Sorry about that.
No, that's okay.
462 yards they gave up, and they got outgained by 91 yards. They've got out, they gained four of their four games already this year. That's not what you expect for that type of team. I'm not getting in front of the Ohio State bandwagon. This is the elite team in college football. This is a team that still has a chip on their shoulder, you know, with the preseason expectations being lower. This is a team that now gets Chase Young back. And, you know, when you bring it, even if you pull starters out in the halftime or in the third quarter like they do, you have five-star recruits moving the ball just as well. Ohio State, it seems crazy to be laying 18 to Penn State. Don't worry about it with this Buckeye squad.
Woo! Speaking about Penn State, as you mentioned, the one team they lost to was Minnesota, my alma mater, class of 2014. Gophers favored by 13 against Woo! Northwestern. How much does the quarterback situation, Tanner Morgan, I mean, concussion, is he going to play? Is he not going to play? What do you make of this matchup? And can the Gophers still cover, or can Northwestern cover if Tanner Morgan doesn't go?
Well, you know, what you have to worry about with Minnesota is bubble burst. And we're going to talk about back-to-back games, and I'm going to take different angles on both games. You know, bubble burst is a Minnesota team and a Baylor team, which we're going to talk about next, that was sitting at an undefeated record thinking if they win out, they can get to the playoffs. The difference is we saw Minnesota go down at halftime at Iowa and then come back and fight for their lives and be very competitive. I'm a huge fan of PJ Fleck. I think he completely gets his team ready for this game. And for those that think, oh, well, you know, what have you done for me lately, Northwestern? And they're off a 45-6 win. Remember, in their previous eight games, they averaged 11 points per game. Well, they beat UMass last week. UMass is the worst team in football. They put up 410 yards against UMass. Every team against UMass has put up more yards than that except Akron. And Akron's the second worst team in football. So take nothing away from that 45-6 win. They only had a 100-yard edge. They're not going to score. I'll give them 3 or 6 points on perhaps a turnover where they kick a field goal. I like Minnesota despite the letdown situation off the loss at Iowa.
You can go online to wagertalk.com and see all the great minds that are at work, including Ralph Michaels. His sports page is right there. Ralph Michaels, as well as Cal Sports. You can get free daily information, as well as sign up for the stuff that he does for both the NBA and college. It's at Cal Sports LV on Twitter and wagertalk.com online. All right, so we talk about bubble burst. None bigger than what happened in Waco, where Baylor had the big lead on OU, and now here they are as a slight favorite against Texas, who must be sitting in the weeds, licking their chops.
You know, call up Mr. Graney and tell him he doesn't have to hide from me just because Baylor lost. There's absolutely no reason. I mean, you know, it's still his son's school. He's still allowed to root for the team.
Okay.
You know, I that's probably the worst half of football I've ever watched, and I felt horrible for those Baylor kids. But I don't think there's a person who, in the beginning of the third quarter, didn't really think Oklahoma was going to win that game. So there's a different bubble burst situation. Minnesota had effort to the final, and they were in this game. This Baylor team was just devastated, and it was deer in the headlights looks. And, you know, while, you know, now they're coming around and they're playing a Texas team who's coming off a disappointing loss. And you look at Texas, Texas has played every game competitive. Go back to LSU, go back to Oklahoma, go back to TCU, go back to Iowa as their loss. You have Tom Herman, who's 15-4 as a dog, you know, and you have a quarterback in Ellinger who has a 27-8 ratio and keeps them in every game. So I clearly think we have a very live dog here in Texas.
Georgia positioning themselves nicely for the college football playoff. You figure if they take care of business, they will have a chance to be in that Final Four. Minus 13.5 against Texas A&M. What do you see from that matchup this weekend?
Well, clearly, Georgia has everything in front of them. If they win out, they're in, period. If you're a one-loss FCC champion, you're going to have beaten LSU, and you're going to be in the tournament. So that's all they have to worry about. You don't need style points. It's very different when you're handicapping these teams. If you control your own destiny, you don't need style points. They mean nothing to you. You win, you advance, you get in. It's the teams in the Pac-12 and those teams in the second tier that have one loss that now have to put style points up on the board to try to jump over people ahead of them. In this situation, you know, Georgia's offense has looked like Baylor in the second half last year. Yes, they played at Auburn, 251 yards for the game, but they played Missouri at home, 339 yards. They played at Kentucky at home. Yes, it was a quagmire, 270 yards. It's amazing to see Jake Fromm and DeAndre Swift, you know, and those wide receivers they have be so inept on offense. I think the A&M program is still a team that's trying very hard. You have Jimbo Fisher, who's also been a very good dog, and A&M has the best three losses in football. Your losses at Clemson, against Alabama, and against Auburn. I mean, there's no three-loss team that's playing better than A&M, but yet people aren't talking about them. They've had a couple of easy games against UTSA and South Carolina. That preps them for this Georgia game. I think A&M is going to give them all they can handle this week and cover the spread.
Wow, I love it. Hey, Ralph, we just got 60 seconds or less. Tell us about USC, UCLA. We see the Trojans are now ballooning to like a 13.5 point favorite.
It is. In the summer, this game line was 5. UCLA's offense is starting to click. You wouldn't know it if you only watched last week's game, but they played an elite defense last week. USC does not have an elite defense. On the flip side, UCLA's defense is not good. I like the new air raid offense for USC under Graham Harrell. I'm going over the total. In no question, when you're watching those two teams in their traditional colors, that is college football.
That is for certain. Ralph Michaels, you are college football. Thank you, my friend, for joining us on Wednesday. We look forward to doing it next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ralph. Appreciate it.
WagerTalk.com and at CalSportsLV, no one does it better than Ralph at WagerTalk. Coming back after this with Sam Gordon here on the Press Box Morning Show. We'll wrap it up in just a few minutes.
It's the Press Box on ESPN 1100 and 100.9 FM.
Lil Cameron, Lil Dipset. Way to finish out the show, Clay. Beat selection was on point today.
Oh man, dude, I loved your playlist. The music you sent last night was just awesome. When I loaded in the system, I'm like, winner, 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 winner.
I appreciate it, Clay. Thank
this
you.
Is good, man.
Thank you so much. Hip hop has had a big effect on my life, so yeah, I'm glad we got to share in that today.
How did that happen? Growing up in Minnesota, in Minneapolis.
I mean, it was just huge. You know, it was just part of the culture. In my neighborhood. I'm from like an inner city area, and it was everything to me, and you know, my friends, and that's all we listened to. I've been a fan since I was a little kid, and you know, as the older I got, I learned about more and more in the history and things like that. So I tweeted a few days ago, you know, a lot of time I talk, you know, just my stories, or I'll tweet about my stories or what I'm covering, but
okay.
I'll talk hip-hop at any time with anybody. That's the only thing I like talking about as much as sports. So
it's obviously a real passion there. And like approach like what's going to happen Saturday, as Sam Boyd will see its last regular season game of Rebel football there. We were going to do this in the next couple days on the morning show. We'll take your phone calls of the good and bad memories, all memories concerned about Sam Boyd as you've grown up here and lived here, because you know, after a while they become part of your life. And I know that you, growing up in Minneapolis, you've had even some great memories of the Metrodome.
Yeah
with the big baggies.
One quick story I wanted to tell, and I appreciate you giving me the time to do this. I mean, the Metrodome, most people probably around the country know it as the stadium that popped with all the snow, and Vikings games got moved and things like that. But as a place I spent a lot of time growing up, the Minnesota Twins played there as well as the Vikings, and my dad made sure to take me. He's the reason I love sports as much as I do today, and plays a big part in that. And took me to all types of Twins games as a kid. And he used to contract with a company in the Twin Cities that had season tickets. I believe it was season tickets to Twins games that were right behind home plate. So once or twice a year, he would get access to those tickets, access to those seats, and he would take me to a game. We'd, you know, have the best seats in the house right behind home plate.
Beautiful.
And I was maybe 6 or 7, and he came and pulled me out of school and said, "Sam, we're going to go see the Mariners play." And when I was growing up, the Mariners had one Ken Griffey Jr., and he was my hero. I mean, he was my idol. He was everything to me.
The face of the league.
Big poster on the wall, had all types of, you know, every toys, whatever, little figurines, things like that. And he in the Metrodome, you had the baggy covering up the football seats. You had the upper deck, and you had big banners of the retired numbers. Kirby Puckett, Ken Herbeck, Harmon Killebrew. There was, like, big tapestries, I guess you call them. They were enormous. And they touched the roof of they touched the top of the dome. And we're sitting behind home plate, and I don't remember. I don't know what inning it was or anything like that. There's a solid crowd. It's not packed or anything because it's a matinee. It's a day game. And Ken Griffey Jr. got a hold of one and lifted it above, I mean, not above the baggy, above the upper deck. He hit it over the retired numbers.
Unreal.
I mean, it didn't come down. It just kept going up, 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 up. And the Metrodome, I mean, it wasn't a nice stadium or anything like that. The concourse is kind of smelled funny, like old hot dogs. And in the bathrooms are those big troughs. And, you know, they didn't have stalls or anything like
that.
Extra
nice.
Yeah, yeah. It was, I mean, luxurious, right?
Yeah.
But I will never forget that. I mean, I seen it at that point in time, my favorite athlete hit such a – I mean, it was such a towering home run. And I'll never – I mean, it's tattooed on my brain.
They stay with you forever. They become a part of your identity.
Yeah, it was such a seminal moment. I guess my sports fandom. I was so young at the time. And Ken Griffey Jr. We would go wait for autographs when I was younger sometimes too. And a year later, Ken Griffey Jr.'s first year with the Cincinnati Reds, me and my dad are waiting outside the stadium, and he signed a baseball for me. That was just the end all be all.
Those are the kind of memories we're looking for.
Yeah.
It won't be Griffey, but in the next couple of days, we want your thoughts. Sam, thanks for coming on today, brother.
Clay, my pleasure. I mean, anytime. It was a blast to fill in. You killed it with the instrumentals. I appreciate you. I appreciate you playing some of my favorite hip hop songs, and it was a ton of fun. So thank you.
Pleasure was mine, man.
I'm glad we got to give Ed some load management.
Oh yeah, well, if anybody needed it. And he'll be back on Tuesday, and we'll see how his load happens. Coming up next, Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff. Thanks again to Sam Gordon. Follow him on Twitter @SamGordon. Bye, Sam Gordon. Terrible.